Welcome to episode 77 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brett Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. A little belated, but here comes a Heroes Corner review corner from you guys. And this one is the last one from a certain place. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinson, and welcome to episode 77 of Comic Timing. And, well, I'm sorry to say this is the very last episode of Comic Timing to be recorded from the Dungeon of Doom. Yeah. I officially move in after this episode. So, you know what? It's going to feel good to record in a space that's a little bigger than a thumbnail. Joined by Brent Cassino. What's up, Brent?
What's up, Harry Potter? You finally graduated?
Yeah, well, you know, Dumbledore kicked me out for smoking pot behind the counter.
You know, it's kind of weird that at the last episode you were saying you get your keys November 1st, and here it is almost December 1st, and you haven't moved in yet.
Well, first you need furniture to move in. And now that we actually have that, now we can officially stop recording from here and stuff. And I get the cable and all that put in on Friday, so then it starts feeling like a home and less like a place where stuff is.
True.
So it'll be nice and friendly and fun and yay. And perhaps if Brent ever comes to New York, he'll be able to experience being in a place that is not the size of a closet to record an episode of Comic Timing.
Wouldn't that be true? It might get nostalgic and want to go see the closet.
And then I would show you the closet and you would cry. Well, this is indeed a Review Corner episode, but because it's happening at the end of the month, we don't have the new Heroes Corner stuff for next month yet. So, just shop at Heroes Corner. They're fun. Good customer service. Everybody's friendly. Everybody's happy. Hi, Bob. Hi, Sam. Good times. HeroesCorner.com. Wow, that's the cheapest plug I've ever made for a site ever on this show. But you know what? It's important, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, this episode, we will be doing a review of three comics. We'll be doing Hellboy in the Chapel of Moloch. We'll be doing
Mohawk. Moo Shop.
Mohawk.
Mugu Gai Pan.
Mahogany. Captain Britain and MI-13, number 6, which you can't really make fun of that much in the name. And we've also got Supergirl for you guys. Supergirl number
34.
34. Thank you for saying it so I don't have to go looking for it. Yeah, Supergirl 34 we'll be doing as well. So, where you want to start, Brent?
Let's start with Hellboy.
Yes, Hellboy. Or is that what they call it? My first Hellboy.
Your first Hellboy comic ever. I can't believe you've never read it before now.
I must say it's significantly different than the movie.
Well, you're talking about the first movie?
Well, I'm talking about in tone, in personality, in look.
Well, yeah.
You know,
the first movie, if you read that first trade, I think it's Conqueror Worm or something like that. It's pretty. That first movie's pretty much that first trade, you know, page for page.
Okay.
There's some added stuff in the first movie. You saw that one, right?
Yeah, still haven't.
Yeah.
So no.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Well, but thank you for explaining it. No, I saw Hellboy 2, but I haven't seen the Hellboy yet. However, there's a DVD waiting for me.
Oh, you saw 2.
So yeah, I saw Hellboy 2. I just haven't seen Hellboy 1.
I thought you saw Hellboy 1 and were waiting on 2.
Nope.
Because I remember we were supposed to review 2 over the summer, and that never happened.
I saw Hellboy 2, and we were going to review it, but it never happened. How about that? Well, I think I remember like mentioning, oh yeah, sure, we should totally do it, and it's one of those many ideas that just got in the back burner that we never got to. But I did enjoy it though. I'll say that much. I enjoyed Hellboy 2 a lot. I just had no experience with Hellboy whatsoever before that, so it was
okay. Well, let me just give you a preface. The first movie is basically the first Hellboy trade. Almost panel for panel. The whole romance angle between Hellboy and Liz, I think, is a Guillermo del Toro invention. Mm-hmm. Because I've only read the Hellboy trades. I haven't read BPRD or anything like that. But in the Hellboy trades, there's pretty much no mention of it. They just work together.
Okay.
I don't know whether it might be in the BPRD or not, but I'm pretty sure they said on one of the DVDs that it was a Guillermo thing. Mm-hmm. And then the second movie especially does not feel like any Hellboy comic I've ever read. It's more of a Guillermo Hellboy, not a Mike Mignola Hellboy.
Well, people say that if you can consider, Guillermo del Toro's to be a fan fiction of Hellboy, then you could enjoy it more if you're a fan of Hellboy.
Yeah, I mean, he has the character right and the tone, but that second movie is just so overfull of Guillermo people. Mm-hmm. Angel of Death and the alleyway. That's not a Mike Mignola thing. You know, Mike Mignola, like, he's not going to have the Angel of Death looking like that, number one.
Yeah.
That looked like straight out of Pan's Labyrinth.
I'll give you that, man. I'll definitely give
you that. And number two, I don't think his fairy alleyway or whatever would have been as brightly lit. You know, it might have had like two or three people and been really creepy and quiet with fog rolling across the floor rather than a bunch of Chinese lanterns everywhere. You know, I mean, you know.
Well, at least there weren't Chinese people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No rafts.
Yeah, that's true. We love you, buddy. And relaunch of Geeks Unite coming soon in one form or another. Listen to Geeks Unite. You'll find out how. But, I will say one thing, though, and that's I can really relate to the character of Hellboy, specifically with this issue in the Chapel of Moloch, because you're sort of, like, down to earth with him, like, going through the adventure with him. Like, he seems like somebody that I could walk up to in the middle of the street, and sure, he'd have, you know, sawed off horns, but he'd just like be another Brooklyn guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, he's really like a blue collar guy. And the cool thing about Hellboy is that since he's been around for so long, in his timeline, not, you know, in comics world or whatever, he's been around since the 40s basically.
Right.
And he was fully grown, I think, sometime in the 60s. So, you know, anytime you pick up a Hellboy comic like the trades or something, you'll be reading them. I think the first two are full six-issue story arcs, and then the third and the fourth and maybe the fifth one are pretty much, you know, individual stories, two issues here, three issues, maybe an issue, maybe a couple pages, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're reading those, they're still good, but they don't necessarily add to the Hellboy mythos or something as you would, but they're still good stories. So you open it up and it'll say, you know, after a brief introduction from Mike Mignola about where he got this tale from. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the – but let me get back to where I was talking. It'll say, you know, like here it says Southern Portugal 1992, or it'll say, you know, Ireland 1966. You know, it'll just place this adventure somewhere in Hellboy's life.
Okay.
I think because currently Hellboy's not working with the BPRD anymore. He quit in one of the issues.
Okay.
But, you know, in this one he is, because it's 1992.
Right.
And it's not now.
And because it's Mike Mignola's universe, he could create whatever in between story he wants, really. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you're never going to get a shortage of Hellboy stories.
Okay. Now is Mignola still writing the Hellboy comic like regularly in Dark Horse, or is it somebody else?
Yes, there are eight trades out right now. Mm-hmm. The first seven are all written and drawn by Mike Mignola. The eighth one is Darkness Falls, I think. Yes. And it's written by Mike Mignola. It's drawn by Duncan Fregredo, who actually does a pretty good job of drawing Hellboy in a Mignola-y vein. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't put Mignola and Fregredo stuff side to side yet.
But it's close enough.
I mean, it's close enough to this that you know, if you're going from trade to trade, you wouldn't really notice a difference, you know, unless you put them side to side.
Well, what's really striking about Mignola's work from this issue is, although his figures are flat, he still manages to make them three-dimensional, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever read any other Mignola stuff?
Never have. No, this is my first stuff here. I mean, surprisingly enough, because I would have thought by now I would have picked up one of his like old Batman stuff or something like that. But
The Gotham by Gaslight is Mignola, and that's kind of in this same, you know, scratchy vein. I haven't read anything else superhero by him, but I did read it was like Favard and the Mouser or something like that from Dark Horse. It's a collection of like stories and. I don't know where exactly they came from, but I think they're like a retelling.
Okay.
But
I think I've read comics written by him, but I've never seen a comic drawn by him before.
Yeah. This. So he, or at least in the past 10, 15 years, has got this Hellboy style, basically. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. I really find it interesting.
Well, I read you know what? Yeah, I did read Amazing Screw-On Head. So that, okay. that's probably
that's the style here.
Yeah, so that's the closest I've come. And also watching Amazing Screw-On Head and, you know, comparing it to this, because that was almost like a perfect, from the page to animated sequence translation, where they actually had Mignola's style still going with it. And, it's definitely consistent with what I see there. I mean, he doesn't really change up his style much, does he?
No. Not I've only really read the Hellboy stuff, the Batman and the Farvard and the Gray Mouser, but in those three books, mm-hmm. or series or whatever you want to call them, it's pretty much this style. You know, it's consistent. Everybody is pretty angular and rough, you know?
Yeah. And the art does definitely add to this issue because, I mean, there's a definite horror vibe with the coloring and the way that he portrays all the demons that you see inside of this issue. I think really adds to the work a lot. Like, I mean, you're actually you see the menace from something like Moloch with that giant sculpture that the painter who had never really sculpted before made of this thing. It's really creepy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you just see it in the thing that comes out of the floor, that's creepy too. And in everything Mignola does, it's either like black eyes or it's like glowing green. And I think that may be something him and Dave Stewart, the colors for this issue and every Hellboy issue, work on. You know, just picking the tone and the vibe and stuff. And it's pretty much consistent from book to book to book because either it's, you know, Stewart is the only colorist on all of the Hellboy books.
Okay.
Unless you're getting like the Hellboy Weird Tales trades, I've got both of those, and those are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That's all by different people?
Yeah, those are all written and drawn by different people, like Hellboy fan fiction kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And so there's one of them, like Young Hellboy, there's Craig P. Russell, or, you know, some different people. Mm-hmm. And those are pretty interesting, but they're not Mignola. Okay. You know, they don't really matter, I guess.
They're extended universe, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. With this whole story, it's funny how even though you're dealing with a very horror element, there's still that humor in there, and that's really what I think probably brings me down to earth with the character, is that he's not all dire, oh no, woe is me, the world is doomed. It's just like, crap, what do I got to deal with now?
Yeah, he's like very nonchalant about it. He's here to do a job. He's not, you know, heavily invested or anything. You know, he's here to do a job, basically. So that's what he's going to do. Yeah. He's seen everything by this time, by now. You know, 1992, he's had years and years and years of adventures.
So what do you think of the art that this painter has drawn? I mean, do you think it's derivative or not?
Derivative of Goya?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's I'll just take Hellboy's word for it because it's not a Goya style. It's Mignola doing Goya shapes, you know. I'll take his word for it.
I had to ask that. But, well, it's just great that when you know, even the artist himself is like, no, this is crap. It's derivative of Goya.
Yeah, I can't. He's like, I can't even draw a Goya myself, so I'm just going to say it's crap.
Yeah, and yet he loses all of his art, which I guess is sad for the derivative man.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What'd you think overall of the issue? I mean, I kind of made my thoughts clear that this is definitely something that's going to have to get me into more Hellboy, I think.
No, I like it. The only thing I wish that I had was, you know, a thing in the back from Mike Mignola about, you know, where he heard this tale or what it's inspired from, because that's the one really cool thing about all of the Hellboy trades. Like, you open them up and they're on like this kind of paper, this thick, stocky paper. And I'm surprised this $2.99, no ads, this nice paper. There's really good production values on here, but
oh, yeah.
It's, you know, it's always on this thick, stocky paper. It always smells really funny. And then it opens up with an introduction by somebody. And then before each story or after them, Mignola does like a either like a full page, just depending on how long the story is, or like a paragraph saying, you know, this is where I heard this tale from, and, you know, it combines these two myths, and then, you know, he does his research, basically.
Well, that's good.
So he tells you where he's getting these things from, so that if you want to know more about him, you can go and look him up yourself, and that's one of the cool things about reading those Hellboy trades, that, you know, they're not one cohesive story, but they're a whole bunch of ones. But it just exposes you to other mythology rather than Greek and Norse and Egyptian.
So he does actually, like, combine multiple myths into his own stories. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, one of them was, like, he combined something. He took some one thing here, like, as a main idea, and then he sprinkles in a couple other things from this mythology or this story, mm-hmm. and he'll tell you these things. You know, this is not exactly how it goes because I took this from this, or, you know, and he'll explain it. And that's – and then you read it, and it's kind of cool, and you don't even think of it like, oh, that's not right, because it's Hellboy.
Right. Okay, cool. So of course, I don't really need to ask this to you since I know what the answer is, but maybe I do. With a one-shot like this, because I know that you've read most of this stuff in trade, right, most of the Hellboy
yeah.
stuff?
So yeah.
Do you see yourself picking up other one-shots like this from Hellboy, or would you rather wait for trade for it?
I'm gonna wait on trade.
Okay.
Because I was pretty much caught up with the Hellboy trades when Darkness Falls came out. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to continue that tradition, because right now I've got like 9 Hellboy trades on my bookshelf.
Right.
And they look really nice together.
Yeah, well, that's something that we're going to be talking about in a future episode, that I might very well be switching over to mostly trades for certain things, certain series that I think would read better and lend better in trades. So I might be right yeah. there with you with Hellboy.
So Ian, you would want to read more Hellboy?
Oh, I definitely want to read more Hellboy after this. I mean, I want to start at the beginning and work my way back.
Okay, well... add on the first couple of trades to your Christmas list, or at that new library edition came out.
Is that an absolute, or is that just
it's a hardcover, but it's smaller than an absolute, but bigger than the oversized.
Okay, I gotcha.
Marvels, you know, it's like it's in between.
Still big enough to fit on the bookshelf, though.
Yes. Right. And it's got the first two Hellboy trades in there.
Yeah.
And those are both 6-issue story arcs, both of those. So you'll really get a kick out of those. And then it has all the things the trade has in it, the intros, and, like, I think the first two trades have character sketches and stuff.
That's good.
And then this has that and more in it. I've actually flipped through it a couple times.
Well, you know
the bookstore.
The one thing that I'm really starting to hate about absolutes, and it literally is the only one thing, is that I can't stand them on a bookshelf.
Yeah.
You know, like, my absolute new frontier is, like, off on its side because it's too damn big to fit on a bookshelf, man.
Yeah, I think this would be able to fit on a bookshelf, just good. Depending on how big your bookshelf is. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, first
it's just dependent.
Yeah, first thing I have to do is get my fucking bookshelf out of here, goddammit.
Yeah.
Yeah, now everything's still in, like, comic boxes. Even my trades are in comic boxes right now. It's starting to feel sad and lonely in my place, but... And BPRD, have you read any BPRD?
No, I have not, but that's on my list of things to read eventually when I get around to it.
That's also written and drawn by him, or?
The BPRDs, I think most of them are written by Mignola and co-written by John Arcudi.
All right, I got it.
And then I think they have a regular artist for that, Guy Davis. I don't know if Mignola's done any of them. I'm sure he did maybe the first one or so, but I think they have a regular artist on there now. That's similar in this art style, though.
Right.
This kind of scratchy, less detailed, but, you know, different art style.
Okay. All right. And
so it fits into the world, basically.
Understandable. All right. And, you know, actually, one of the other things that I want to ask before we move on to one of the other books is, I guess, you know, going back to when we talked horror on the show with, you know, Damien and Brian, is this the sort of horror that you prefer? The horror that doesn't take itself too seriously? Like, I mean, you know, one where there's still, like, a little bit of humor injected in it, and it's not all, like, dark and gloomy and blah?
Well, I mean, I don't really consider Hellboy horror. I think of it more as supernatural or creepy.
More
because
fantasy.
There's yeah, more fantasy and supernatural. I'd more say supernatural than anything. Mm-hmm. Just because it's mostly mythology and stuff, but there's never any, you know, somebody might get eaten or something like that, but there's never any guts or gore. When I think of horror, I think of like nasty things. Like I saw the movie Teeth this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, that, dude, I love that movie.
That was horror.
I fucking love that movie, man.
And my roommate's going, looking at me now, don't talk about that movie because I was telling him about it at lunch on Monday. I was like, I just saw the creepiest movie, Teeth, and I was explaining it to him. He's like, dude, I'm eating.
My favorite line, my favorite line in the movie is the most over-the-top line spoken by the doctor. It's true! Vagina dentata!
Vagina, it's true! Oh, and my favorite part, oh, it seems to be a run of these lately. Almost seems to be a shame of re-detaching it.
Oh, man. Good times, good times. At the same time that I watched that, I watched that back-to-back with a movie called Xerophilia, which is about it's about these people who have like an extra hormone or like an extra chromosome or something that makes them switch between sexes when they get aroused. So they go from man to woman.
Weird.
Yeah, it's a really bad movie, by the way. It's like it's okay. Terrible, but it's terrible in the good way, if you know what I mean. Like, sit down and watch it and just completely ignore one character. Like, the doctor in it is the most annoying character in the world because it's a British actor who doesn't know how to sound American. And just completely disregard that character. Skip through her scenes if you have to. The rest of the movie is actually not that bad.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, definitely. You know, I'm don't know if I'm gonna pick up other one shots, but I'll certainly pick it up in trade. So Hellboy's way up there for me right now, and I agree.
So out of five, what would you give this?
Give it about a 4.
Yeah, I'd give it about the same. It's a good story. It wasn't great. Didn't blow me away, but I mean, it's a one shot.
Yeah, it's a nice, friendly, happy, easy to read thing.
Yeah,
basically it. All right, so roll on to there. Let's go Marvel. Why don't we?
All right. So, brace yourself.
Uh-oh. Should I brace myself? Am I going to hurt here? Is that it?
No, not a world of hurt. I mean, I have my problems with this issue, and I'll explain them as we go along. But.
All right. Well, Captain Britain and MI-13, number 6, written by Paul Cornell with Leonard Kirk on the art with Doperdang and Reber, the rest of the crew there. I just love saying Doperdang. So you've been reading Captain Britain up until this point, right?
No.
No, you haven't. Okay, all right. So this is your first exposure to Captain Britain and MI-13.
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't read Pete Wisdom before this, the Max series?
No.
Okay, all right. So what do you think as a first-timer?
Pass.
Really? Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, I don't know if you want to go into your history with this after I'm done. Mm-hmm. You probably should because to me, this book didn't grab me at all. The recap page tells me what happened in the last arc, but it doesn't tell me anything about the characters. Number one, I've never read any Captain Britain ever.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's like a Captain America ripoff for Britain. I know he can fly, and I know he's invulnerable because he says it in this issue, and I saw him fly. Yeah. That's about it.
I wouldn't exactly say he's a Captain Britain. I wouldn't exactly say he's a Captain America ripoff. There are other British characters that are more Captain America ripoffs than him.
Okay, Union Jack. All right. Well,
yeah.
He wears a flag on his chest, and he's called Captain, and the name of his country is in his the second half of his superhero name.
Okay, fine. I'll let it pass.
Me not knowing anything about the character, that right there would just, you know, whatever. So, you kind of put this to me as a new story arc, a new jumping on point and stuff. And I started out reading this in the first 3 pages. I realized this is not a new jumping on point, maybe a new story arc, but it completely picks up from the last issue where apparently the cliffhanger was Blade putting a stake through Spitfire's heart.
Right.
Because she's a vampire and he's a vampire hunter. That stuff I knew, But I mean, I don't know what the whole point of MI-13 is. I'm guessing they're a spy thing.
They're the paranormal investigations, basically.
Okay, they're the BPRD for Britain.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so, but I mean, there were some other issues here, like why are we going into this hotel, number one, because apparently it's just on fire, and they go to investigate and something's there, but they didn't really establish why they need to go there. You know, like at the beginning of every Law and Order CSI show, you arrive at the crime scene and they tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. And this kind of didn't have that for me. They just jump right in, and it was just kind of like I felt like I was missing something. Like it was in the end of the last issue and they didn't bother to recap it here.
I gotcha.
Also, the fight scene between Blade and Spitfire, the one page where there's 16 panels on there, I couldn't follow it at all. Mm-hmm. Could not follow it. I mean, I don't know whether to go, you know, from the top panel to the bottom or from the top panel to the teeny tiny panel. I mean, it didn't work for me at all. I mean, I know he's trying to fit a bunch of stuff on here, and I just didn't care at the end of the day. I was trying to read this book with open eyes or whatever, and I just did not care. And the art, Leonard Kirk, I liked him on Batman 1 year later. Mm-hmm. But I think I've come to realize that between looking at this stuff and his Agents of Atlas stuff and then looking at that 1 year later stuff, that I really liked Andy Clark, the inker on Leonard Kirk. Rather than liking Leonard Kirk, because Andy Clark did some fill-in issues for Detective later on, just himself. Like, he wasn't inking anybody. He did the art and the inks.
Yeah.
And it was much closer to the 1 year later stuff than this stuff is. So I'm kind of realizing that Leonard Kirk is, you know, for me, he's not a very strong artist. So that was another thing about this issue that I didn't really gravitate towards. And I, the whole time, I never really felt like there was a threat here, you know? Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like it was a setup or a proper lead-in to a story. Because I felt there's too much going on. Like, we should have gotten all of Captain Britain going through here, or we should have gotten all of MI-13 and the Blade and Spitfire thing.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Well, you know what? I will agree with you that it probably was not the best jumping on point because, I mean, the reason I picked this in the first place is because they were billing it as a good place to jump on.
And yeah, but it doesn't tell me anything about Pete Wisdom,
yeah.
Who I'm assuming is the guy in the glasses.
Yeah, Pete Wisdom is the
You've
guy in the glasses.
You've told me that Pete Wisdom series by Paul Cornell for a while now was pretty good.
It is really good, and you know what? Even if you don't like this, I would recommend picking that up. It not only would it give you a bit of a backstory on Captain Britain and MI-13, but it's just a damn good series. Like, I mean, it's better than this. I like Captain Britain and MI-13, okay. But the Wisdom Max series was really good.
All right. Well, I'm still may look at that because you have recommended it so much. But I mean, Black Knight and this nun-looking girl—I don't know what their powers are.
She's a Muslim. She's a Muslim character, so she's not a nun. Not a nun, but you're right that they don't even establish that in this. So,
I didn't know what she was. She had magic powers. I saw that at the beginning, mm-hmm. But I mean, other than that, they don't really do much. And she doesn't really look. She looks more like a nun to me, I guess, because her hijab is too loose. I mean, I'm kind of nitpicking here, but the Muslim girls that I went to high school with, Halima and Sophia, I mean, in my IB classes, there was a big Muslim contingent. You know, there are 4 or 5 girls that I got to know pretty well over the years. And, you know, I would learn the name of the head covering is called a hijab. And, you know, I don't know whether it was they're all like from Trinidad. So I don't know if it was their culture or whatever, but it was always like tightly wrapped around their heads. And anytime Leonard Kirk draws it, it looks like she's wearing a cap and she's wearing a hood. It doesn't look like it's meant to cover her head or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just an art thing, but I did not get the whole Muslim thing. Is she like a white girl converted to Muslim, or is she actually like Middle Eastern? Because even her skin tone, it doesn't portray Middle Eastern.
She's a British Muslim character. So she was born in Britain, and her family basically came over. That's her situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she looks like a white girl that converted to Islam, and not a Middle Eastern that is living in Britain.
No, she's.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying there, and the coloring could have been a little bit better. However, she is basically just like a white skinned Muslim.
Okay.
That's what we've been established with her. And no, you're totally right though that this book needed a thorough first page, like a thorough previously on it, where they go through all the members, and that's one of the things that I don't think Marvel does enough these days with their books.
Well, I mean, even in Avengers Initiative, that one we reviewed a couple, you know, 2 months ago or whatever, had all the players there. I don't know if, remember if it said their powers or their, but at least said their names, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this just didn't do that. So I understand your reasons for it, but I guess, and this is a combination of things. I mean, one, because you know that I liked the series in the first place, but I mean, this issue was perfectly fine for me because I did know what happened at issue 8. And I'm also a fan of Leonard Kirk, so I guess that's, you know, reverse strike two on my case, because I loved Agents of Atlas, and I've been liking what he's been doing here on the arch. And Blade, I think, adds an interesting, really just an interesting dynamic to the book, because he's sort of, by the end, sort of shoehorned into becoming a member of the actual MI-13. And from the looks of things, he's going to be sticking around. I mean, next issue I read already, and, you know, he's around, and this is the part two of this story that's going on here. And he's basically going to be sticking around to keep, quote-unquote, keep an eye on Spitfire. So it's fun that someone remembers Blade as British, number one. You know? Did you even know that?
No.
Yeah. Blade is supposed to be British from when he was actually... you know, first appeared in Marvel Comics, he was a black British vampire hunter. That's it.
And I did not get that from the Wesley Snipes or the Spider-Man cartoon at all.
Oh, certainly not. Come on, man. No, because everybody forgot. And that's another thing that Paul Cornell does, is he takes characters that haven't really been used in a while and finds a place for them. Like Black Knight, well, even though he's been used a couple of times, he hasn't been used well. Because Reginald Hudlin's Black Panther is ridiculously bad. So, you know, when he showed up in that... Go ahead. Say what you want. Go ahead.
No, I was laughing.
Oh, all right.
I picked up Black Panther in the Civil War stuff. And by the end of that Civil War arc, I just felt it was too preachy, black power, whatever. Like, I read one issue. I don't remember what it was. And I kind of felt offended by it, and I was just like, you know what? I don't need to be reading this.
Yeah, and Hudlin used the Black Knight. If memory serves me right, he used them even for the wrong religion. Like, I think Black Knight is supposed to be like Catholic, and he used them as like a Christian hunter or something like that. And my God, you know, like, do your research, dude. Seriously. So, it's nice to see Black Knight actually written right and actually in this and good and all that. I have had exposure to Captain Britain in the past, so that's why that works for me. And Pete Wisdom, I don't know if you know this, Pete Wisdom used to be married to Kitty Pryde.
Nope.
Yeah. Back in the Excalibur days, Kitty Pryde and Pete Wisdom were married. That was during Warren Ellis' run on Excalibur.
I wouldn't know that Kitty Pryde was still over 17.
Well, it depends on who you ask, really. But it was during her older than 17 phase, because she fluctuates. She does. But yeah, so that's where Wisdom is from. That's where his history is and all that. So I enjoy it just as a regular issue of Captain Britain and MI-13, but it's just not right for jumping on. I will totally admit that, and I will totally understand why you're not going to pick it up another issue, which I'm sure you're not, right?
Right.
Yeah, all right, so...
So you can probably guess what number I would give this.
So, Brent, what number do you give this?
A 2.
All right, that's not too bad. I give it a 3.5. I mean, it's a good issue of Captain Britain and MI-13, but it's not the best issue, so that's why I'm not giving it a high number. It's a middle of a story arc thing, which sucks because it was part one. That's why it sucks nuts.
It does feel like it's the middle of a story arc.
Yeah, because it was. It really was. I mean, even though this is part one... you're totally right that it takes off from what happened in the last issue. So, you know, you had to have been reading from issue one, really, to understand what the hell's going on, because they just finished their Secret Invasion arc, like, 2 issues ago. And last issue was when Blade first showed up. So that technically should have been part one of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably would have made you happier, because that we would have done issue 8 instead of issue 9, and you would have known what the fuck was going on.
This is issue 6.
Issue 5, that is. Yes. I'm tired already. So, yeah, issue 5. There you go. You know what I mean. But, bleh, all right, yeah, 3.5, you give it a 2. So, all right, let's move on to DC. Supergirl! All
right, you first.
All right, well, I
no, I mean, not... No, I'm just saying that because I went first on the last one. I did like this issue, but you
no,
go ahead.
No, I know. I said uh-oh because I needed to grab my issue. Sterling Gates, Jamal Igel, Keith Champagne. It is Keith, right? Keith Champagne?
Yes.
All right, Keith Champagne. This issue, dear Sterling Gates, wherever Geoff Johns found you, he needs to go back there and find more people like you. Okay, because it seems like now, like, whoever's a disciple of Geoff Johns manages to write as good as him these days. And this is the first Supergirl issue.
Yeah, Jeff Katz.
Yeah, Jeff Katz, right, exactly. Yeah, Sterling Gates, Jeff Katz, the rest of those guys all seem to be, like, in the same camp of, like, we're as good as Geoff Johns now. And this issue was
Pete
great.
Pete Tomasi, Green Lantern Corps. I know he's not, like, a Geoff Johns disciple, but... Might as well. I mean, he's doing the Kingdom Come one-shots, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just doing two of those, I thought, or one of them.
And you know, since James Robinson isn't leaving the Superman books, like, I guess you can put him in there, too. Although, I don't know, did you read Why in the Gutters this week?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so apparently he did leave, but then, you know, made up with the Dio, which leaves Mark Waid in a bad spot. But what are you going to do?
Hey.
He came this close, man. He came this close to finally writing Superman. Son of a bitch. But I like this issue of Supergirl. Going back
from
the tangent. Yeah. Art. Enjoy the art, Mr. Igel?
Yes, I did. And I guess we should plug Raging Bullets. They did a Jamal Igel interview a couple episodes back.
No, we don't need the plug.
Discussing this issue, and it was pretty good.
And when do we ever plug Raging Bullets? I mean, why would we start now? God.
Oh, well, I want to plug them for that, and because I did leave them two voicemails the other night.
Oh, cool. And I listened to the voicemail on the last episode.
Yeah, and I listened to that. That's what inspired me.
Ah, great.
So I did leave them some voicemails, and yeah, just kind of making fun of them for the things we make fun of them over here. But basically, you know, just giving them a good rubbing.
Watch out for bridges. That's all I got to say. But yeah, no, the Igel issue, the Igel interview, I did listen to that. It was really good. So
yeah,
as usual. In fact, I'm about a quarter of the way through their Freddie E. Williams interview part one now, because I figured I'd jump straight to that. Yeah. Well, come on, Freddie's the man. What can I say? But yeah, Jamal, you know what's most important about this issue? He draws Supergirl like a girl.
Not Supergirl woman.
Yes. I mean, how many artists now, and it doesn't matter who you're going to name, but how many artists now drawing Supergirl have drawn her to look 19? You know? I mean, Mike Turner was one. I mean...
His was kind of like the over-sexualized, though.
Right, right. Ian Churchill.
Yeah. His is pretty good, actually. I like his Supergirl.
Those first five issues. Supergirl, really?
Those first five issues of this series, I really liked. Huh. Yeah, the Jeff Loeb and Ian Churchill, I really liked those issues.
Yeah, well.
I jumped off after that, but.
Yeah, but the previous artist who was on us, whose memory escapes me, was actually pretty decent, but there were a couple of instances where Supergirl basically, like you said, looked like Supergirl woman. And. Now we're back to her looking her age, which is certainly nice. And the coloring as well, very vivid. Very, very vivid. Drew me right into the issue.
Oh, I didn't even notice that, but I'm open at the Lana and Kara page of the sunset, and it's very nice, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very pretty. Well, why can't I talk all of a sudden? Here we go, one more time. What's interesting is that even though this is Jamal Igel art, and I can tell it's Jamal Igel art, Doesn't it sort of feel like they're going for like a House style for the Superman books now? Like everybody's got a sort of like along the same lines, color wise and appearance wise for even Superman himself. That everybody's sort of getting closer and closer to, I guess, sort of the same appearance. If you know what I mean. I'm probably talking out my ass here, but.
I don't know. I think this is closer to the Renato Guedes stuff than Gary Frank.
Well,
but yeah, Pete Woods right now is on Action, so I would say that yes, they're probably all pretty similar right now.
Right.
In the new Krypton storyline, which will make for a good trade read, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. Even though I'm picking it up, you know, like a stupid head.
Yeah, well, I am too, but hey.
Oh, and for God's sake, Supergirl, you do not, and I mean do not, fuck up a Subway Series game. All right? That's all I'm saying. Goddamn. Baseball deserves to not be run into by Supergirl. I'll leave it at there. I love my sport, man. What can I say? But yeah, I mean, overall, it was a fun issue. This was a jumping on point. I mean, you talk about a jumping on point, man. I mean, you know, it was a total status quo change for Supergirl.
Yeah.
I mean, do you enjoy the change? I mean, do you enjoy her becoming Lana Lang's, niece?
Yeah, that I don't know about, but I guess we'll see. We'll have to see it play out.
I mean, I just thought it does. I mean,
if it does play out, yeah, obviously. But, well, that's what I don't understand. They're trying to introduce this new status quo change and then, you know, bam, 100,000 Kryptonians next issue.
Right.
I thought that was a little awkward and weird.
Well, at the same time, though, this does make things really frickin' complicated for Kara, because she's in, you know, like seven different places at once right now. On the one hand, she could be with her, you know, her mother and father and, you know, live a somewhat happy life with the, you know, Kandorians. But on the other hand, she could be living a pretty damn happy life in, you know, Metropolis, living like a normal human being while still being Kryptonian. So she's got to make some heavy choices here now.
Well, actually gives her something to do in her book, probably, so that's good.
Yeah, tell me about it. But, yeah, overall, it was nice seeing the interaction with Superman as well, the whole, you know, like, coffee scene and everything. And he's a real big brother for her. I mean, even though they're cousins, I mean, he's been here so much longer than her, so he knows, like, the ins and outs of the, you know, the entire DC universe. And can give her pointers like, "Hey, word to the wise, don't fuck up a Subway Series game." All right, come on.
You know what I liked?
What
about this issue though? Thank you, Sterling Gates. Somebody finally explained who and what the fuck is Silver Banshee? Because she looks like a lame '90s villain. I don't even know why she's around anymore. But I finally know what she does now.
Thanks to Sterling, right?
Yeah, thank you, Sterling.
You know, it's. And how long do you think this would have went on otherwise? I mean, like, how long would you have been wondering about Silver Banshee if not for Sterling Gates?
Probably a lot longer, because she was in the 1 year later stuff used in there, and I didn't know she screamed. I knew that. So I didn't know if it was like a Black Canary thing where you just cover your ears and cringe or what.
Yeah,
I mean, hey,
she screams and has boobies. That's about as much as I know
exactly
for this. But yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think whether I like or dislike the way that Cat Grant was treating Supergirl in this. Like how you know, because she's the gossip columnist, she's gonna go out there and you know, try and make Supergirl the front page headline by spreading all this gossip. But at the same time, it reminds me way too much of what the DB has been doing over in Spider-Man, you know? Like, it's not real journalism, and I'm not sure if it's something that the Daily Planet should be doing.
Well, I don't know what issue it was, but it's something recently. Yeah, this issue. They're opening the Daily Planet up like it's one of those tabloid things you guys have in New York.
Yeah.
You know, it opens right to left rather than you got to flip it open halfway before you open it again. I thought that was kind of weird. Like, she's holding it on the on that page where she's sitting at, like, on the on the tower or whatever, right? And it looks like the DB almost, just with a different article, like its layout and stuff. And that's not a newspaper. That's a something different. I don't know.
Well, is that an inconsistency, or is that the new status quo for the Daily Planet? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I just thought it was weird, and you brought that up, and I thought of it.
Yeah, and you know, it's really nice seeing Pa Kent. You know, he's really gonna be around a while.
Yeah, thank you, Pa Kent.
Yeah, sorry, I had to. No, but two things that were probably my favorite moments of this issue were the note that Kara left Kat. Don't call me if you ever get stuck in a tree, and that cute drawing of the cat attached to it.
That was hilarious.
Sterling Gates knows how to write a freaking issue, man. I mean, this is probably the best issue of Supergirl I've read since Peter David's run.
I was kind of wondering if I was going to like this at all, you know, but I could see myself staying on after New Krypton.
Yeah.
Just based on this issue, because this was really fun to read.
And
that's why I'm still on, like, Wonder Woman, too. I'm not into Wonder Woman, really, but, I mean, Gail Simone writes a good issue.
Yeah. And come on, man. Tim gave her Connor's glasses. That's beautiful stuff. I mean, when that happened, I actually teared up a little bit. I got to admit. I mean, I'm a softy, you know. Whenever Connor gets mentioned in any way, shape, or form, I'm like, oh, Connor. But now, you know, she's wearing his glasses. She's wearing a piece of Connor. Tradition lives on, man.
You know what, though? I thought that scene was kind of weird because Tim, to me, kind of read like he was being a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Batman's off the grid, and I don't set up identities for people. Talk to Oracle. And then he kind of has, like, this sneer on his face, like, when he's giving her the glasses and stuff. It's kind of a mixture of the writing and the art. I mean, I don't know.
I do see the sneer there, but I think that might have been a mistaken sneer. I'm not sure if that was meant to be a sneer.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, that was a nice moment, I guess, but I kind of read it a little bit differently.
Yeah, and hey, even interaction with Diana, you know, talking Wonder Woman, still good. Written Wonder Woman here, even if it's not by Gail Simone, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so overall, I was pleasantly surprised, and I will be picking up Supergirl probably from here on out. God damn it, another title.
Okay, but are you going to be getting that from Midtown, or
I'm gonna be getting that from HeroesCorner.com.
Have you made the switch? Are you cutting some books like we discussed last episode?
The cut has sort of happened. What did happen though is I did do basically almost my entire order from Heroes Corner, and my order was only about actually. I'm gonna bring up my order right now to see how much money I spent this last order. Just so I can see for sure, but I think I probably only spent about $40 more than I was getting from Heroes Corner otherwise,
mm-hmm.
and that would have cost at least like $90 at the store.
Yeah.
So,
congratulations!
Yay! Yeah,
you saved yourself some money. See, I told you. I not tell you last show, episode 76?
Yeah, no, actually, you did tell me. Not you didn't tell me.
I did tell you. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You said, didn't you not tell me?
Well, like, didn't I tell you? Like, I told you so?
No, see, that's better. I'm just correcting your grammar.
You're just arguing semantics.
I am a grammar snob. What can I say, man? All right?
All right, Brian Deemer.
Hold on. Let me bring up the order so I can see how much money I actually spent. Let's see.
You did say this is 77 at the beginning, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, just checking. I don't know why. I thought maybe you said 76, and I was like thinking about that earlier. Like, oops, gotta do that again.
I hope I said 77. I mean, if I did say 76, you could just do like, welcome to episode 77 of Comic Timing.
Okay, we'll do that if that's the case. Okay. I might even have to edit this thing, so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just throw it up there. Yes. We're on such a roll.
Oh, joy.
even though we have kind of this dead air thing because you decided to bring up your order.
Well, thanks a frickin' lot. Come on, man. Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. My total order for the month is 140.64.
And, wow.
Before this, I was spending about 90 or 100 with Heroes Corner, and then spending about at least $80 more at Midtown.
You know what I like about their emails? They send you at the end, it says your savings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to calculate it on my own. Now I don't.
Yeah, I saved way too much. That's kind of how I'm going
to
put it.
That's not a bad thing to say, actually. I saved way too much.
Well, I mean, looking at all the stuff that I saved money on this time around, I mean, I got to keep this up. I mean, I got Trinity from Heroes Corner for the first time.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've never done that before. I mean, I've always picked up the weekly books at the store, and this is the first time I'm doing that. And the 140.64, that's after $9.95 shipping. So I saved even more than that when you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, because that's just $10 shipping. That's it for the twice a month. So, yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Good times. See, and you said we didn't have an ad for them on this show. Come on.
Yeah.
That's 10 minutes.
HeroesCorner.com. Get your fucking comics. That's a promo right there, all right?
that's a banner.
HeroesCorner.com. Get your fucking comics now. Oh, man. All right, so I think that's pretty much it here. So,
whoa. What about the big ticket item that came out in October that everyone was talking about?
Oh.
Want to discuss that a little bit? We kind of mentioned it when we were picking these things, but it wasn't a special pick, but we said we might.
You talking Joker hardcover?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, you can touch on it a little more than I have.
Have you gotten to read it yet?
I skimmed through it. That's as far as I went. Plus, I read a couple pages on Scans Daily, but that's as far as I go. It's sitting right there, though, so it might be done by the end of the weekend, but what'd you think?
I loved this. You know what I really loved, though?
What's up?
Get it in my box. I unwrap it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's the first thing I flip through. This might sound a little gay. My roommate's looking at me funny. But this book is disgusting. And just smelling the book jacket. Smell it. Just smell the book jacket right now.
Oh, my God.
Do you smell the book jacket? Smell the book jacket. No, like a big, big long whiff like this. Doesn't smell good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
See? And I thought that was a wonderful piece of engineering or marketing, whether by coincidence or on purpose. The Joker hardcover book jacket should not smell good.
You're reminding
me. You should be reading this and smelling it and going, I should not be reading this because this book smells terrible.
You want to know how I know you're gay?
Because I'm sniffing books?
Yes.
No, but I didn't do it on purpose. I just opened it up out of that plastic wrapping, and it just hit me. I was like, it was just like, bam. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Oh, and Heroes Corner did include a Secret Invasion poster for me along with my order this month. So thank you.
I got a Ultimatum poster and the Ultimatum calendar thingy.
Sweet. Yeah, but now tell me a little more about it. I know that people were comparing it to Heath Ledger Joker when this has been in the works for 3 years. And
yes, this has been in the works for 3 years, and they didn't see the movie, so this is not a Dark Knight companion.
Yeah, even though it could be.
It fits nicely, though. Mm-hmm. It does fit nicely because, number one, Lee Bermejo draws the Joker similar to how he was done in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Okay, the same.
Yeah, thank you.
I am a frequenter of BatmanOnFilm.com, which they do their own Bat podcast now, I think, but it's more about movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they, for a long time, they're, you know, the interviewer, you know, Bat movie news, that's where you would go.
Do they call it the My Parents Are Dead cast?
No, they don't.
Oh, that's a shame.
But no, so they had Lee Bermejo, they had an interview with him, and they had him draw the Joker. Mm-hmm. This was a couple years ago, you know, around Batman Begins time, I guess.
Right.
And he drew the Joker, with this scarred face, basically, as you see him here.
Yeah.
And so when the movie came out, I was like, oh, well, obviously they saw the image online somewhere, or they're thinking on the same wavelength. So, you know, you read the interviews with Lee Bermejo recently, and he says, this is not a Heath Ledger Joker. I'd had this before. It's true. He did have this before.
Good.
You can go out there and find it on the internet, because, you know, I'm sure if you go on Batman on Film, they do comics reviews now too, and they did review this, and I'm sure they'll plug that interview in their review. So just search for it. You'll find it.
Good. And I hope they mention us for this really, really long ass plug that we just gave them.
No, I mean, they're a fun website.
Oh, yeah. I know. And
I should
let them know.
Email the guy now. Yeah. You let them know.
Yeah. Let them know. Give him a big up. Big up.
Okay. Yeah. So about this book, the one thing that kind of I didn't get was, you know, a lot of the pages aren't rendered in paintings and some are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before I got this book, I read a lot of the interviews where it was saying, you know, he's trying to control the speed of the book by, you know, some panels being rendered kind of being like a slower motion type thing where you'd spend more time looking at the page.
Right.
So he's trying to control the speed that you read it at, and I kind of find myself not agreeing with him at all.
Okay.
Because I don't know if it's just the way I read it, but I just tore through this thing. And I noticed when it was and when it wasn't, and I was like, ooh, nice, and I kept going.
It's very expensive. You really shouldn't tear through it.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's not a detriment to the book. It's still a great read.
All right.
And I think it is a pretty good definitive take on the Joker, because you're actually spending time with him in and out of him committing crimes. So it's more than just, you know, you'll get in a Batman book where you show up and the Joker's crazy, insane. He has his ups and downs in this book, and it really fleshes out his personality.
Now, question, I heard that Harley's in it. Is it just someone dressed as Harley, or is it actually Harley Quinn?
No, she's in it.
Okay.
But she doesn't speak.
Right.
All so there's
right.
No Mr. J bullshit.
Aww.
She's just kind of there in the background, but she does get a pretty interesting spread, which I'm sure you saw if you flipped through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Does she have her giant-ass mallet?
No.
Aww.
Not that I saw.
I like the giant-ass mallet.
There was a weird moment in here where the narrator, Johnny Frost or whatever, is walking through the Joker's hideout, and he just walks past the door when he shouldn't, and Joker and Harley are having an intimate moment, but Joker's on his knees crying, and Harley's like having a wine bottle.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, did I miss something? Like, Joker has emotions or is crying? Making up from a fight or something?
Well, you do realize that tragedy and comedy are hand in hand.
Yeah, so I thought that moment was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely put this on your Christmas list if you haven't picked this up already. It's definitely worth your time.
Good paper stock?
Oh, yes.
Good.
Very much.
All right, excellent. Yeah. So
then the thing I was worried about this is, you know, it's a $20 hardcover.
Right.
Like, okay, the Killing Joke hardcover, $20, not very long. This thing is, you know, I don't know how many pages it is exactly, but it's thick.
Yeah.
It's going to take you a little while to read it. You know, you're not going to tear through it.
Well, I'm still happy I picked up my Killing Joke for, like, $2 in a bin.
In a soft cover, yeah.
A soft cover at New York Comic Con, as opposed to the recolored, re-rendered edition of Killing Joke, which wasn't necessary. I'm sorry.
No, I kind of like the original coloring, actually.
Yeah, same here. So, all right, so I'll give everybody an update on my thoughts on the Joker hardcover once I get to them. But yeah, this is sort of an end of the month thing that we did here. Obviously, we're almost time for the next review corner already, but we'll space it out by a couple of weeks, because we're not sure exactly when we're going to get the JSA when it comes out, because I know that it's coming out at least a week later than it was supposed to. So we'll keep you posted on that. But what are our next three picks, Brent?
Captain America, Daredevil, Dead on Arrival, JSA number 21.
Mm-hmm.
And Umbrella Academy. No. Umbrella Academy Dallas.
Oh, Umbrella Academy. That's next week. Okay.
That's going to be the next review corner episode we're doing.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. Akihabara Deep is the month after that. My apologies. Okay.
Isn't it the month after that? Month after that?
Is it the month after that? Month after that? Or is it just
No. You're right.
Yeah, it's just the month after.
Because G-Man is the month after that.
Yeah, not the month after, just the month after. All right, so yeah, and Umbrella Academy, you read the first Umbrella Academy, right?
Yes, that's coming. I'm going to reread it and do a BK's Bullets on it, and it'll be up in the month of December.
Hallelujah. BK's Bullets lives.
And I'll try and put it up before we do our review corner for it.
Good. Okay. Speaking of BK's Bullets, you got any upcoming and RG?
Other than that, no.
No Raging Bullets ones?
No, I don't have the time.
Okay. All right. You got any BK's Thanksgiving?
Yes, I'm going to have Thanksgiving.
Good.
Yes.
Good. I'm very glad to hear it.
We're having it on Wednesday.
Wait, what?
Yeah, my mom has to work on Thanksgiving, so.
Aw, dude.
One of the unbenefits of working at Disney World.
Oh. Fucking evil bastards.
Yeah, she's working until like 5:30, I think, on Thursday, so.
That's not cool.
I just talked to mom and dad yesterday and found this out, and I was like, whoa, we're having it on Wednesday, okay? I was like, that's full. That's cool.
I'm eating Thanksgiving out this year for the first time because my grandparents are no longer capable of making. Well, they're old enough where we're actually doing the full Thanksgiving thing would be a pain in the ass for them. So we're going to eat out as a family at a nice swanky restaurant for a Thanksgiving menu thing. So that'll be cool.
Well, and it just means that I think I'm probably getting it. Spend Thanksgiving with Mandy and her family. So give me something to do.
All right. Well, tell her happy Thanksgiving for me, all right?
I will.
All right. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there in the U.S. land. And the Canadian one, I think, happened already. So happy Canadian Thanksgiving postmortem, I guess.
Woohoo.
All right. This is going to come out after Thanksgiving anyway. But all righty. I think we're basically done with this episode here, unless there's anything else I'm forgetting. Is there anything else I'm forgetting, Brent?
Not unless I'm forgetting it, too.
Okay, good. Well, you know what? There is one more thing I wanted to mention. Let me grab it real quick. One sec. Okay, here we go. I got in the mail, actually, just yesterday, I believe, a free comic from Scott Bradley, who I met at San Diego Comic-Con briefly in Episode 300 and the Super Show. He posts as Kid Benicia on the forums,
mm-hmm.
and he sent me his comic. It's called From Here to There. And it came out this fall, and he gave it to me for review purposes. So I'll probably give it a review. Might even put it on the website for that matter. So yeah, thank you very much, Kid Benicio. And I'm gonna check it out From Here to There from Resolution Comics for mature readers. So it should be fun.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. All right, and nobody sends you anything because nobody loves you.
Meh.
That's all right. You got a Sean Cummings present coming soon enough, man. Don't worry about it.
Have a Cummings present coming soon.
That's what she said.
All right.
Well, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by Comic Geekspeak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicboys.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Please dig us on dig.com. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. And please laugh at whatever Brent is laughing at. So, for Brent, I'm Ian Levesque, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. All right, what are you laughing at?
And, my roommate was watching the Sex and the City movie on the dorm channel.
Okay.
And I muted the microphone for a moment. I was like, you know how I know you're gay? He's been flipping through the channels for like the past 3 hours. There's nothing on TV at all.
It's almost Thanksgiving weekend.
It's Thanksgiving weekend, and there's no Daily Show, not even a fucking rerun.
Yeah, I know. That's
cool. No movie. Have you seen Minority Report? Well, it's kind of late now.
I saw Minority Report. It was good.
Well, I have it next to me, so he's probably watched it already. You haven't seen Minority Report? Oh my goodness.
Tell your roommate who I've never met Happy Thanksgiving also.
Okay.